the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Marek and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Well, welcome once again to your favorite CHL podcast. This is, of course, Junior, Jeff Marek, alongside Sam Cosentino in the bowels, ice level here, Sam, at La Colisée. Been here since last week. You've been here a couple days in advance. 2015 MasterCard Memorial Cup. Tonight, we will see Rimouski face off against Quebec. We'll talk about what we've seen. We'll preview what's still to come. But your thoughts on Quebec so far?
Well, the entire tournament's been great. I mean, there's been excellent ceremonies. The crowds have been really good. Even last night when you have two essentially non-market teams.
Patrick Roy helped.
Patrick Roy and the ceremony last night was touching. It was moving. It was pretty cool to see the 06 team because, for me, that was a special cup. That was my first cup in Moncton and got to know a lot of those kids really well. And it's interesting to see, you know, some of them have kids now. And starts to make me feel old, Jeff.
Oh, this just handed to me. We are, Sam.
Oh, okay.
Don't be shocked.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little old today. I mean, Quebec City at times can get the best of you. It took a little bite out of me last night, but all for the sake of the game.
Did you take a standing eight count last night,
yeah,
Sammy?
Yeah, all okay, for the sake of the game, though. It's pretty cool. Like, you get all the NHL teams and you get all the people that are passionate about the junior game in one spot. You know, that's part of the reason why I enjoy this so much.
You know, we went into this one saying, you know, with all due respect last year to teams like Val d'Or and to London, who, you know, in a lot of ways laid an egg last year, to be honest, have been going 0-3 in the round robin. Last year was all about Edmonton and Guelph, and that's the way it ended up. This year going in, it was all about four evenly matched teams. And outside of the 7-3 game, these have been real even games, Sam.
Yeah, it's been home team has won all but one game decided by one goal. And I think that's what I expected coming into this thing. And you look at Oshawa, who's the 3-0 team, they really kind of made a living playing a defensive style of game and winning a lot of one-goal games, two-goal games. And that's how they've done it so far here at this tournament. But it's been... there's been a lot of parity here, and it's as we expected. And who knows, this thing is far from over. I mean, everything could get extended here tonight with a Rimouski win and turn this tournament upside down.
Should be fascinating. Oshawa is 3-0. They advance to the final automatically. Are they the best team, in your estimation, that you've seen so far at this tournament? Or do you say to yourself, well, hold on a second. Kelowna hit a crossbar yesterday. Kelowna hit a goalpost.
Yeah.
Kelowna had Oshawa had an overtime affair.
Yeah.
You say to yourself, yes, Oshawa is 3-0. The caveat being, though, they could be 1-2, like maybe everybody else at the end of the night.
I think if you look at the numbers, they've had the lead in all but maybe 9 or 10 minutes of the tournament. So for me, that's a good indicator as to Oshawa being the best team. Getting the lead, playing with the lead, no panic when they're tied. Mm-hmm. That it's been that kind of event so far. I think DJ Smith's done a really good job getting the proper matchups. Although in the first two games they didn't win the face-off battle, they did in last night's game. And I think that's become a big part of the story. And especially when you're a team like Oshawa, who uses a lot of set plays off the draws, they found a lot of success. How many goals have they scored in that regard already? So overall, you'd have to say that they're the best team, partially because they've never really, you know, trailed in this thing and they've beat everybody else.
And you know what? DJ Smith has, and he gets to it early, he gets to it often, lines in a blender. I mean, last night we saw a lot of Michael Del Cole playing with Michael McCarron and Hunter Smith at times. And I first looked at that. I said, well, it's a curious configuration. And then you saw how they pinned Kelowna down in the offensive zone. It was spectacular to watch.
Yeah, the attention to detail has been really, really tight. And the lapses that Oshawa's had, that's where it's come back to bite them.
Yeah.
Other than that, they've been in control. Puck possession, you know, face-offs, as we've talked about. Goaltending's been good and very timely.
Yeah.
And their best guys have essentially been their best guys. You know, you look at Del Cole, you look at Castles, they're doing it again.
Hey, you know, I know maybe I shouldn't be surprised, considering he was a first-round pick, but it just seems as if the development and the improvement in play of Michael McCarron from last year in the Memorial Cup to this year is stunning.
Yeah, it's fascinating for me to watch his development. He's, you know, kids talk about trades and the commissioners talk about trades and it's not good for the kids and so on and so forth. But you can't find a better example of a guy who's benefited from a trade. You go into a wide open London system and you learn how to play like a pro in an offensive style of game. Then you go and work with DJ Smith, where their success is predicated on defense. And if you don't play defense, you're not going to play. So he's really taken the best of what both coaches have had to offer and has turned himself into a guy who looks like a pro. When he came over from the U.S. program, he looked like a newborn deer on skates.
You know, oh, there were gangly. Bambi moments. Yeah. It was just like Hunter Smith in Windsor.
Yeah, same sort of thing. And I think you could say the same thing about Jared Tenorti when he did the same thing. So I think their paths have really mimicked themselves to this point. Tenorti is on the verge of being an everyday defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens. And McCarron, while it might take a year or two in the American Hockey League, he's going to be a guy that has really fallen into their lap as a right-handed center, and that's a tough thing to find. But he's been dynamite. It's been really fun to watch his development because he's just taken off.
Let's bring in our special guest. André Ambarbo is back on the podcast. If you ever feel like co-hosting, just give us a call because we love having you. Now, how many times will it be this season that Rimouski and Quebec have faced off? Because I know it's the eighth time in the last 23 days, I believe.
It will be the 18 times tonight that they face each other. So they know each other pretty well.
So no secrets at this point between these two teams?
No. They know each other pretty well. And anyway, they know each other pretty well at the beginning of the season because of the history of Philippe Boucher and Rimouski. He drafted like half of the team of of Rimouski right now. And Serge Beausoleil is in the league for a long time. He worked for the Remparts a few years ago, so he knows pretty well the Quebec Remparts too. So no secrets tonight. It will just be a great game.
I look at this, André, and I say there's always a team that comes to this event that can't regenerate the emotion from having won the championship. Rimouski, for sure, for me, is that team right now. Do you think there's a chance that they get that emotion back in tonight's game?
Here's how I see tonight's game going. Oh, of course. You need the microphone, don't you, André? I'm thinking she's got a headset.
Just yell.
Just talk really loud. I've heard you before.
It's just a detail, a microphone. Yeah, I think they can. I think they can because they will be really very motivated to play against the Quebec Remparts. But obviously, the gas tank seems empty so far emotionally. I think physically the guys are still there. I mean, everybody has little injuries at the summer of the year. Everybody's tired too. But during the last game, they were so flat. I mean, we didn't recognize the best defensive in the queue. But the guys were so pissed out after the game. They were so pissed. I mean, and this morning, I think they were a little bit quiet, calm. They had a good practice. We saw that this morning. So maybe they will be able to bounce back. But Quebec Remparts will be happy to make their revenge tonight against Rimouski. So I think there will be a lot of emotions on the ice tonight.
You know, I kind of see tonight's game going like this. The first 10 minutes will dictate so much of what we see for the rest of the game. I think that Rimouski comes out with everything in that first 10 minutes. And if they don't get a goal, if the Remparts can push back, Fekale makes a big save here and there, you wonder if you start to see Rimouski start to sag. Because I expect a big start from Rimouski tonight. What about you?
They have to, but they're not used to. They have bad starts from long time now, so they have to be really good in the 5-10 first minutes, because with Quebec, you never know which team will be on the ice in the beginning of the game. So if the first goal will be very, very important tonight. It's a cliche, but I think tonight it's true. And maybe a big save from Fekale or a big save from Desrosiers, because Desrosiers will be...
Let's pause on that for a second. Yeah. The goaltending situation in Rimouski, we've seen with Serge Beausoleil before. I don't have a one and a two. I have two number ones. Are you surprised they went to Philippe Desrosiers?
No, that was my call this morning. I thought he will go with Desrosiers. It's like, it's not a change. It's a continuation of the goalie situation. And Desrosiers was in the net for Game 7 against Quebec, so I think that's the bet. Serge Beausoleil did with those.
But that was a surprise too, though, going in Game 7, going to Sam and I talked, it was, oh yeah, this is un fait accompli, comme on dit en français, they're going to Gandon again, and then it was Desrosiers.
Yeah, I know, but I think Desrosiers, he's the real number one. I know Serge told us a few times, I have two number one. It's not true. The real number one is Desrosiers. This is his first goalie. And I think Desrosiers is like a little bit more showman than Guendon. So maybe, it's true. So I think maybe you need that in that attitude in the game seven to front the Ramparts, their speed and their offensive. So that was my call, and okay, we'll start with Desrosiers. Let's see if he's doing
it. But you know what, guys? Here's the thing. In my 10 years, it's unprecedented that a team can go and win with two goalies. Yes, we saw it in 2012 with Dubois and Girard. Girard started, and then Dubois took it the rest of the way. But to be able to come into this event and win with two goalies, I think that's an almost impossible task. I mean, it hasn't worked so far. A little different when you have a seven-game series and you got a little leeway in this particular event. Now it's come down to one game. I think that's the right choice. I know Serge Beausoleil feels really confident about having had met Philippe this morning and talked to him, and feels he's going to be able to channel the same energy that he channeled in Game 7. But, you know, should Rimouski extend its life beyond this game, you'd have to think that it would be Desrosiers who would finish it off and start the next game. But that may not necessarily be the case. And so looking at the big picture and looking ahead to Sunday, I just don't see how Rimouski can continue to do this and have success and play on Sunday if this flip-flop continues.
Let's start by tonight, but I think it can be at the same time a huge advantage to have two good goalies at this time of the year. I just told that everybody is injured, everybody is tired, and both of them, they are good friends, so they have a good relationship. During the last game, when Serge switched his goalie, we saw them big hug and let's go. So we continue where they are used to it. But at the same time, I don't know. At this time of the year, I don't know if it's a plus or a minus, actually.
So for this tournament, Sam and I just talked a little bit about the Oshawa Generals, a little bit about the Kelowna Rockets. Who specifically, by way of player and by way of team, who's impressed you, who's surprised you, who's caught your eye?
Michael McCarron, for sure. I saw him in London last year, and I was not impressed at all. And this year, wow, he looks like an NHL guy. I think he's almost ready to go up. It's really impressive how this guy progress in the last season. And I must say, I discovered Leon Draisaitl on junior hockey. I mean, we saw him with the Edmonton Oilers at the beginning of the year, but he can be a game changer. Even if yesterday we didn't see him much, I think this guy is really, he's very good.
The Leon Draisaitl thing is fascinating, and even a lot of ways in yesterday's game, and almost, Sam, you referenced this during the game with RJ as well, considering how both coaches wanted to play chess with Draisaitl and Castles and McCarron and, you know, go right down the list, it almost, in a lot of ways, in the first period specifically, took away from the game. And you wonder if maybe, because the first period anyhow, you wonder if that just takes those players out of that rhythm when you're playing, like when you're the player in that situation and you're playing the matchup game as opposed to just playing your game, Sam.
I would have preferred, if I'm Dan Lambert, I would have said, I'm going to play Leon Draisaitl every other shift, and you put whoever the heck you want out there against them. This is an NHL player, and this is, in this particular situation, I think he has the ability to overcome matchups. But when you look at the first period, McCarron goes, I think, 4-for-4 against them in the faceoff circle. At that point, does it really matter? So now you have to consider what the effect is on your player and on your team after that. And as you said, Jeff, and you could see it from where we were, you know, the bird's eye view up top is spectacular here. It really killed the rhythm of the game, and I think it really took Kelowna out of the game early on. And in case you're looking for further evidence of that, look at what happened in the Oshawa-Rimouski game. Same sort of thing. It really killed Rimouski right off the top, you know, with the matchups. DJ Smith got his matchups. And I think at times we get too consumed with that. Players are good players, and they've had success for a reason. And you know what? On one day they're going to be better, on another day the other guy is going to be better. So we'll see how much that trends. I don't think it's going to trend much in this game. You know, talking to Serge just a couple of minutes ago, he said he's really not worried so much about the matchups. And you know, the familiarity of 18 games would obviously have something to do that. But really, it's been a fascinating storyline in this event. And when it comes to Oshawa in particular, they want to slow it. They want to grind it. They want to muck it. The best way to do that is to fool around with the line matchups, and DJ Smith has had his way in that regard for the most part.
And about tonight, I'm quite surprised that Philippe Boucher told us this morning, I won't regroup, declare Ernie and Etchegaray tonight. We will see them a few times together, maybe on the power play or something, but he will go with his three first lines like at the beginning of the tournament. I'm quite surprised about it because it worked pretty well against Rimouski at this beginning of the series. I know Roy was out of the lineup. He's back now. Verrier plays really well too, but I thought he would regroup them.
Maybe the answer is always the same. It's the goaltenders. But for whichever team tonight, whoever's going to win, Quebec or Rimouski, who do you see as potential game changers, or who has to have a big game if one of these two teams is going to win tonight?
Fucale has to be perfect, and I think he has been the best goalie of the tournament so far. We saw Fuchs like he was in Saskatoon. Oh my God, he's awesome. He had a tough season, but right now it's Fucale like I knew him when he was with the Halifax, the game changer. I'm wondering where is Anthony Duclair so far. I mean, he can be a game changer, but I don't know if he wants to be one. He has the talent, he has the speed, he has the hands, and we didn't see him much so far. So we'll see. And obviously the Kachev and Timoshev has to be better. I know Timoshev has 2 goals in the last game, but I mean, they need to give more to the Remparts.
You know, Kachev's that interesting situation, and Sam, you and I have talked about this before. It almost seems as if he needs to get bumped a little to get into the game. Like, he needs to be physically engaged early in order to get himself into the rhythm of a game. And at that point, and we've seen, listen, the Oilers tried to sign him last year before Central Registry rejected the contract. Now, this is a guy that has caught the attention of NHL teams, and to Andre Ann's point, this guy could be a game breaker for the Remparts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way throws the puck like it's on a string, but he needs to be engaged, and you'll get an indication of probably 3 or 4 shifts and as to whether or not he's engaged in the game. If he's engaged in the game, he becomes dangerous every time he touches the puck. If he's not, and the body language is bad, how he skates back to the bench, his head down, missed pass or a missed opportunity, and you see him hang his head, he's done. Mm-hmm. And it's really it's evident. It's as clear as day. You just watch the body language for me. That tells you everything about Kachev.
All right, Andre, and last question for you. What happens to Soi?
I think the Remparts will win tonight. And they have to. You know what? They have to. They don't have the choice. They have to get rid of Rimouski tonight. And I think the building will be pretty packed. So I'll give the victory to the Remparts.
Bien, merci. Thanks so much for stopping by, as always. I'm sure you'll be on the next podcast as well.
Merci beaucoup.
Bien, merci beaucoup, Andréanne, from TVA. Tonight's game is huge, of course, for both teams, and we could have a scenario if Rimouski wins for the first time in this tournament's format that we have three teams that are 1 and 2. That is new territory and surprising territory when you consider this format stretches back to the early 70s, Sam.
Yeah, it's pretty cool scenario. I just don't know if we're going to have the opportunity to see that present itself. And I hearken back to, you know, in my experiences here at the Cup, and you can go through the teams going back to, you know, 2006, for example, up to 2007, Lewiston, unbelievable run down the stretch. You know, Jonathan Bernier, Marc-Andre Cliche, all these guys, they come here, they come to the Cup and they can't regenerate. I think you can say the same thing when you look at 2012, the Edmonton Oil Kings, the surprise winners over the Portland Winterhawks, a younger team, they couldn't regenerate. 2011, Owen Sound in Mississauga, overtime win. Jared Maidens gets sold. Couldn't regenerate here. And I think that's the path that Rimouski is stuck in right now. It's so hard to go out and invest and win the league championship, and all your focus is on doing that. To get to here and to recreate that that's the hardest challenge that a coach has. And it's really, this is kind of the only event where that happens in North American sports, where you win a league championship and then you have to go and find that level again to try and win another championship.
Yeah.
And the team that can do that the best is usually the team that wins it.
And that's why it's been said, as far as hockey goes, it is the most difficult championship to win. It is, and you have a short window, a small window to do it. It's only open for a player 1 year, maybe if you're lucky two. On the rarest of occasions, it's three, but it is such a challenging one. To win over the past couple of days, for whatever reason, a lot more mainstream attention. I guess it sort of started in the Erie series, with no surprise, because headlines follow Connor McDavid. Every time I'm on radio doing a hit talking about the MasterCard Memorial Cup, Cole Castle's name always comes up. I was on yesterday with Jeff Blair and Elliot Friedman, and that was the first topic of discussion. Who is he? How good is he? What's his skill set? I mean, everyone knows that he's a son of Andrew Castle's. How does he translate into an NHL hockey player? So I've had to field this one for the past 3 or 4 days, so I'll ask you the same question. Cole Castle's, as an NHLer in your estimation, how does he project?
Yeah, he's a pro. He's a all day a third line guy. I think as he grows, as he strengthens, as he matures, maybe he moves into a second line guy with a little more of that offensive flair to him. But to me, he's all day long a third line center.
Yeah.
Because you can win draws, because you can defend, because you can score a little bit. And that's what, you know, when you look at championship teams here in the National Hockey League, the depth doesn't end at two lines. It's not a top six. It becomes a top nine. So that's the way I see things in terms of Castles and his career, where he projects, where he rates out. If you get a third-round pick that is an everyday third-line guy for you,
you've done well.
You've hit a home run.
Good for the Vancouver Canucks. He's a second-generation player, and I had a chance to speak to another second-generation player today in Gage Quinney, who seems to have a hot hand in this tournament as well. His father was drafted by the Quebec Nordiques. Had Gage when he was playing for the Las Vegas Thunder of the old IHL, yeah. And that non-traditional hockey market, finished up playing in Europe as well. But Quinney's been a real nice revelation for the Kelowna Rockets, Sam.
He has, and I think that's a real good topic of conversation, Jeff, because there are a lot of guys that maybe have come out from under the table, mm-hmm, to really have an impact in this event. And it would start there, I think, with Gage Quinney. He looks like a pro son. You know, plays the game the right way. He's on the right side of the puck,
yep,
on a lot of occasions. He's got pretty good touch around the net. I think when he was acquired by Kelowna, they didn't realize just how good a player they were getting. It almost seemed like he was more of a throw-in than anything else. And Bruce Hamilton and Danny Lambert have to be extremely pleased with what they've got out of him. But let's continue on that topic, Jeff, because I like the storyline, and I'm going to use DeRoche as another guy who, for Oshawa, is a guy who really at the start of the year, I mean, you couldn't find him with a search warrant. And now, to me, looks like a guy who's going to be a third, maybe a fourth round pick in the National Hockey League.
You know, it's remarkable the way opportunities present themselves, because if Chris Carlisle didn't get hurt, are we talking about Stephen DeRoche?
Yeah, Will Pechnik, the same thing. You know, yeah. He had to take on those minutes, and it's amazing that chicken and egg. What gives you confidence? Playing time, experience, or how can you get that if you're not having success? So it's that,
yep,
it's that thing. So that door opens up for him. He kicks the door wide open, and he's not about to close it anytime soon. And I'm not talking just about a guy who's scored some big goals here for Oshawa. I'm talking about a guy when you watch play defense, good stick. He's tough. He's physical.
Yep.
You know, pin guys against the boards. He won't let him go. He's got really good size.
We talked plenty about him in that North Bay series. Like, that's, yep, when he really popped for just about everybody. Yep. Was that series against North Bay?
Well, because North Bay is a big team. They're a lot like Oshawa, and their attention to detail and their systematic play and their discipline. And so he was definitely a needed piece there, because that was, you know, one thing that Oshawa has had the edge in just about every series or every game they've played. They've been the bigger team. That wasn't the case against North Bay,
mm-hmm,
and you know, and DeRoche was a big part of that.
You know, DJ Smith made the point today at his press availability when he was asked about some of the additions that the Oshawa Generals have made. Dakota Mermis and Michael McCarron coming in from London. Brent Peterson coming in from the Kitchener Rangers. He was really fast to say, well, hold on a second here. The core of our team are all homegrown guys. Ken Appleby, Michael Del Cole, Cole Castles, go right down the list. You look at Kelowna. Yep, there's another one. You look at the Kelowna Rockets, and, you know, they brought in some big boys, of course, Josh Morrissey and Leon Draisaitl. Quebec, starting last summer, they went about the process of completely rebuilding their back end. Ramouski goes out and picks up Gandon from Drummondville. They've made their moves as well. But DJ Smith's point was, you can't be successful unless your key guys are homegrown guys,
yeah,
and have grown up, yeah, in your program. Agree or disagree?
I agree 1,000%, because those are the guys that are going to deliver the coach's message. As kids, and we've all done it. We've all done it as kids. But you tune things out, what the adult's saying, what the people in authoritative positions are saying. And that happens with kids. It happens over the course of a long season. And no question it happens in junior hockey teams. And so when you have your core group who can then deliver that same message with a different voice and a different way to deliver it, mm-hmm. ensure that that message continues to get delivered, that comes from your core guys. Because they don't, guys who come in from other places don't quite understand that message the way the guys that are there understand it. And here's the other thing. It's a big carry-forward situation in Use Oshawa in particular. Rimouski, very much a homegrown team, too, and
yep.
you've seen that culture built. But I'll go back to Oshawa, and it goes back to Boone Jenner and Scott Lawton and those guys who have really laid the foundation for this hockey club. Jenner with his hard work, Lawton with his success. And when DJ Smith needs an example, he just needs to point to those two guys. They're going and making their money in the National Hockey League. Why? Because of hard work. Not because they're John Tavares skilled or Steven Stamkos skilled type players.
Yeah.
And not to take anything away from those guys, but it's the work.
You know, when you mention those two guys, Boone Jenner and Scott Lawton, both NHLers, and you say to yourself, well, who's the direct beneficiary on the ice of that? Like, what's the common thread? Who's the one player that played with both those two guys?
Castles.
And Michael Del Cole.
Yep.
Right on their line. And, you know, speaking to DJ Smith this morning, I said, because he's brought in, like, he's had old Oshawa Generals players send in sort of inspirational messages and thoughts for the players that DJ would pin up on the board throughout the playoffs. And I asked him, I said, do you ever have any old ex-players, whether it's from Windsor or old Oshawa Generals, call any of the guys? And he said that he had Josh Bailey,
yep.
With the New York Islanders, call Michael Del Cole.
Yeah.
And said, you know, when he was going through some struggles early on in the playoffs, and relied on that world of history to help a player right now. And you just can't help but thinking to yourself, that's a coach that, A, understands the history of the team, and understands what a player today needs, and isn't shy about reaching out and saying, hey, Taylor Hall, can you send in something for the guys? You were there before. Hey, Ryan Ellis, can you send something in for the guys? You were there before.
I think Kelowna's another really great example of that, because Kelowna's tends to be the summer home of a lot of NHL players. And
sure.
Of course, you know, with the Shea Webers and the Josh Georges coming back, they've had that same kind of input from their alumni to be able to come out and hang out with the guys a little bit and just relay some of the information and what it's like to be a pro, what it's like to play in a big event like the MasterCard Memorial Cup. And so, and then you look at the Dan Bylsma thing, where Dan Lambert basically
right.
turns his team over to Dan Bylsma for three practices and a morning skate and says, hey, you take the reins, you go from here. Now you start to hear from Stanley Cup winning coach, and you start to get the same message reinforced but in an entirely different way, and that's been huge for the Kelowna Rockets. So those guys, no doubt, have had an impact. I mean, you look at the Quebec Remparts, Eric Villiers had some input, a cup-winning coach with Shawinigan in 2012, to be able to relay some of those experiences. The Rimouski Oceanic have a wonderful history, and I'm sure Sid at some point has sent his...
Sid, Vinny, Brad, I mean, go right down the list.
And those guys are really important to their respective clubs, because it gives the current players a sense of, A, how special and how important this time is, B, what it's like to make it as a pro, and C, to show the pride of wearing that respective uniform.
Sam, before we wrap up here, your thoughts on what we see going forward. We know that the Oshawa Generals will be there. We don't know, of course, who they'll be playing. Tonight we have Rimouski and Quebec. What do you kind of, as you close your eyes and blue sky with the rest of this tournament, I'm asking you to pull out the Cosentino crystal ball.
Yeah,
essentially is what I'm
right.
doing here, Sammy. Crystal ball this thing. We know how we're going to get to Sunday. We just don't know the teams. We know one of the teams. We just don't know the other team was going to be involved. What do you think?
Yeah, I just have a hard time seeing Rimouski regenerate that emotion and that passion. If they do, it's going to turn the tournament upside down once again. But because of that reason, because Quebec's the home team by way of building.
Yep.
I think that's going to be a huge edge in tonight's game. So I give the Remparts the edge in this game, mostly because I don't think Rimouski can recreate this stuff we've talked about. And then moving forward, you'd be looking at a Kelowna-Quebec final, and that's going to be fascinating, because in the back of Kelowna's mind is going to be that opening night win
yep.
that Quebec had over them.
That'll be back-to-back for Quebec, too.
And it'll be, well, yeah, but with the tie-breaking day would be off.
True,
so
that's true.
So there is that period of rest. And then I think it's anyone's ball game from there. But Oshawa's, the one edge that Oshawa's had from the start of this tournament, more so than any of the four teams, the other three teams, is the fact that DJ Smith has the experience from 09 and 10. And he has prepared his team just enough. Not too much, but just enough. And in terms of handling like they had to in 2010, where they won three straight and went to the final.
Yeah.
And really, by a large margin, there was some NHL teams that would have had a tough time. Windsor, jokingly, of course. But I think that's going to be a huge advantage for Oshawa heading into Sunday. Just the experience of DJ Smith and how he goes about using this time from last night after the game ended right up until puck drop on Sunday.
Should be fascinating. All right, on that, we'll wrap things up. On behalf of our producer, Maddie, back at the home studio in Toronto, and on behalf of Sam Cosentino, Jeff Merrick signing off from Le Colisée. Don't forget, tonight, 7:30 Eastern, our coverage begins on Sportsnet. It is the Quebec Ramparts facing off against the Rimouski Oceanic. Thanks so much for joining us on this very special Memorial Cup edition of Junior. We'll talk to you again soon.